The Greek tragedian Euripides once wrote, "The best and safest thing is to keep a balance in your life. Acknowledge the great powers around us and in us. If you can do that and live that way, you are really a wise man." Welcome to a new episode of Shot Happens, your show for parents, players, and administrators of the travel and academy soccer world. My name is Robert Hay. And we have a full studio today because, as always, with me is Coach Reed Maltby, the brains of the show. Coach, you have been doing a lot of episodes for the Coaching Code recently, and there's been some really good content going out there on the on your podcast.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, so that's much easier because it's usually just me, so I can record it anytime. And it's been a lot of fun because I'm not getting enough feedback from people yet telling me exactly what they want to hear. But you know how the muse strikes. I'll just be reading an article and say, oh, my gosh, I've got to cover that topic. So it's been a learning experience for me because I usually dig really deep into the science. So I end up learning a whole lot before I even put the show out.
Yeah, and that comes through very clearly. It's a great must listen if you don't already subscribe. Do like I do and subscribe. And speaking of a podcast to subscribe to, I'd like to welcome a special guest to the show today, Christopher Harris, a.k.a. The Gaffer, who is the founder, brains, and creative force behind the website and podcast World Soccer Talk, which since 2005 has been the independent voice for soccer fans, featuring all kinds of news and analysis on the world of soccer and the media that covers it, and also a mostly weekly, pretty much regularly weekly podcast about how to watch and stream soccer. So, Chris, welcome to the show. And for the few people who don't know who you are, why don't you just give a quick intro about yourself?
Sure. Yeah, definitely, Robert and Reed. It's a pleasure to be on the show. So my name is Christopher Harris. So it's really soccer is my life, my passion, has been since I was a child. It's my full-time job now, which is, it doesn't seem like work, but it is. But for some background, I was originally from Wales, lived there till I was 14, moved to the United States in 1984, and, was always either playing soccer or coaching soccer, always following soccer. And, in the last probably like 5 or 6 years, turned a part-time blog into a full-time job. And my job entails everything from watching soccer, writing about soccer, particularly more so from a television focus and streaming focus, helping soccer fans nationwide find out when the games are on, how to watch them, etc. But and from time to time, we do articles or feature articles on different topics. But yeah, my life is soccer, and so this is a kind of a perfect opportunity to talk about the sports on this podcast, but also from a different angle, one which I don't think I've ever been interviewed about, and I've done, I don't know, probably hundreds of interviews, but I've never been interviewed about from the coaching player, really more the parent aspect of this. So I'm really intrigued.
Yeah, well, one of the things that really struck me and one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on is because when we listened to your podcast, it's funny when you talk about what you watch for the weekend, it's very often it's, well, I didn't get to watch as much as I wanted live because I was traveling for one of my kids' soccer games. And that really resonated with me because I think any of us who have a kid in a travel or academy program is sitting there going, you know, on a Monday when you're at work or something, saying, yeah, I didn't get to do this because I was traveling to some, you know, place that I would have never traveled to except for the fact that we had to play an 8 a.m. game and then a 6 p.m. game or something like that. Yeah. So we really wanted to talk about kind of another perspective on the travel system, which is, you know, work-life balance for the parents. You know, it's great for the kids. They have to balance their, you know, schoolwork, social life, you know, and they're playing and they're developing in other sports. But for parents, it's a very different perspective. You know, it's something that parents of all sports go through. So not just soccer, but we want to tackle that topic today and really get into it a little bit with two people who know a lot about this topic. So what I wanted to do is start off the conversation a little bit by asking Chris to kind of go into some of your experiences in balancing work and you know, and other life priorities with travel soccer. I mean, right now you have the website, which is a full-time job and your full-time job. But can you talk a little bit, maybe some of your reflections or experiences on balancing work and getting your kids to their practices and games?
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, oftentimes, especially the last few years, actually for some background, so I have four kids. Three of them are active playing in soccer, and the fourth is my eldest. She's 21. She's just graduated college. So, and she has no interest at all, which is fine. So three kids actively involved, two of them AYSO. So it's a little bit less, crazy. But then, the third who was on a travel team, but this season is on the development academy, which is the first time, this season is the first time ever that they've had a girls, development academy, nationwide. So it all revolves around those three. But the last couple of years, last few years, I've always wondered to myself, like, how my job is very flexible. So both myself and my wife are self-employed. So for me to cover soccer, all I need is a laptop, really a laptop and an internet connection. So even when I do go away for weekends, or it's a long away trip, to take my kids to soccer, or sometimes all three of them have games on that day. So it's, if we're lucky, it's kind of back to back to back. It never is, but if we're lucky, so I'm flexible in that regard. But I always wonder, I'm like, how do normal working class parents do this? Because I have no idea how they could do it, because oftentimes, I mean, it's last minute. I mean, in terms of getting ready for practice or for games, you have to be really, really flexible. And, maybe these days some companies are a little bit more flexible than in the past. I know when I was working kind of a 9-to-5 job, which was really more of a 8-to-6 job if you were lucky. And then that doesn't include commuting. It was difficult to break away to do anything outside of that if you had kids or other things. So I always wonder how people do it. But for me personally, it's, having the job that I have where I'm writing about soccer or watching soccer games, I can just bring my laptop or watch games with my mobile phone. Oftentimes during most practices, I have my laptop with me. So even though I'm bringing my kids to practice and I'm, you know, watching them play in the distance, I've got my laptop with me. So I'm working on stories in advance or watching matches or, I mean, so I'm lucky, very, very fortunate to be able to balance things. And even with the flexible balancing, it's still crazy. It's nonstop. And I love it. And my kids enjoy it. It does feel like it's another job on top of the job I already have. But, I just feel really fortunate that I do, balance things and, can be more flexible than say an average, household.
Mm-hmm. And Reed, you've talked in the past about your kids' soccer experiences and, you know, them not necessarily choosing to go down the full-time soccer route. What about some of your experiences? I mean, you essentially had full-time jobs, with kids not in your sports or being in the sport and then not being in the sport. What are some of your reflections on this?
Well, I was the same as Chris. I always wondered how others did it because my job was to be at the fields. So it was really easy for me to, you know, I never felt guilty about having to miss work or have to ask for time to go to a tournament or something because that was my job, was to be there at those tournaments. So I always looked at the other parents and thought, you're both working really great jobs. This is an extremely expensive club. How are you both here on this road trip? Or how do you coordinate what you're doing, you know, on a regular basis to get, because some of them had two or three kids playing soccer. So not only was the expense extremely high, but the stretch of their logistics was unbelievable. And I had amazing parents. They were always at all the games for my kids. And I'm like looking at the far sideline thinking, you know, it's a Monday evening at 6 p.m. and we were just at the fields all weekend. How are you pulling this off?
For me, actually, the last few years my life is also Google Calendar. So I've got everything plotted. I mean, there's so much stuff going on in terms of practice schedules. And for most of my kids, the practice schedules aren't the same time every night. Sometimes it's different times, different locations. And so Google Calendar is kind of what I've been using the last few years just to at least keep some semblance of organization and without us going crazy. Just so my wife and I can look at that and go, okay, all right, today's calendar is this. We need to be here at this time. And the challenge oftentimes, too, is just that say for the development academy or the travel team, the game might start, say, at 10 o'clock or 9 o'clock, or say 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning. We have to be there an hour before, usually for warm-ups, and yeah, and then it might take half an hour to a couple of hours to get there. So there's a lot of early, I mean, basically almost like dawn, waking up in the early in the morning, getting the kids ready in terms of, you mean breakfast, etc., and then planning out the day. I mean, it's, I guess we're fortunate in that we've been able to kind of plan things out so well as thinking about, you mean snacks, lunch, I mean, all the things that are included. But it's crazy. I think it's one of those things that, our non-soccer parents, kind of look at us and think, like, you guys are nuts. This is insane. Like, no way could we possibly do anything that you're doing. It's a whole different world.
Yeah, I
would agree. Mm-hmm. I remember friends posting things about going golfing on a Saturday or having a nice brunch on a Sunday. I'm like, oh, that must be nice. What's that like?
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah, that is one of the joys of working in an office sometimes, is going in and saying, so what'd you do this weekend? Oh, you know, I went out to this small town. Why? Well, you know, soccer. And eventually I think people kind of understand, and they the best thing in the world is to have a coworker who's been through it. In my office, I have a coworker who is a little bit more removed, but he and I swap stories about the crazy, terrible places that we travel. So let's, I want to circle back on a point here that we've kind of touched upon, which is, the parents of the club. And, we've talked a little bit in the past about how parents can, travel soccer is more of a bonding experience for parents. I mean, you really get to form friendships and get to know people that you might not otherwise know just because you go through a lot of these similar experiences. Reed, is there, give me some good examples or some good, things that you've seen about parents, working together to maybe make this time crunch, work for each other.
Sure. A couple of things I saw over the years. I had parents that would work out carpools for the week. So they lived in similar areas. It's tough with some of the travel teams, 'cause then the families become very spread out, but they would coordinate that all the kids would end up at one house on practice night, and that parent would take them to practice, and then a different parent would take them home, and then the next practice was the same thing. And they had it scheduled, same thing as Chris was saying, they had it scheduled out through Google Calendar or whatever they were using, where they just knew every week whose job it was to do the carpool. So these, I'd have these kids show up in van loads to training, which made life a lot easier. The other thing that we started doing, and we've talked about it in other episodes, and it's been talked about quite a bit, is the idea of a social coordinator. Mm-hmm. We started assigning a parent every season whose job was to coordinate social activities. And it wasn't just for the kids, because we talked a lot about team bonding, but it was for the parents too. So that way, when we went, or for families, I should say, when we went on a weekend game where we're going to spend an entire day in a small town in the middle of nowhere, there was a parent whose job was every season was to find activities for everybody to do between games or while there. And so then entire families would travel, siblings would go in tow, but instead of being bored to tears with whatever coloring books, comic books, devices on the sidelines, they had activities that they would do together during the game, little crafts and stuff for the kids like that. And then between games, we would have things that were family oriented, so we could all go do something that allowed everybody to sort of get their family time. And so they ended up structuring the family time into these trips rather than just saying, oh, we've got another soccer tournament. It's, oh, we're going on a trip to Steubenville and we're going to visit the such and such. So it was really impressive to see them sort of create that balance within the game, within the structure of soccer itself.
Great. Yeah, that social coordinators, as we've been discussing, are essential, and I'm thankful for my team social coordinators. Chris, I'm a lucky guy. I live in a city that's very tight knit. It's a small city, and everybody seems to know everybody, and you see the same names over and over again for coaching and activities. But you have a kid who's playing very competitive level soccer, and I'm going to assume that a lot of the parents aren't neighbors and don't live within a 5-minute drive of each other. How do you find the parents for your teams kind of working together to try to reduce the workload?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it is very fragmented in South Florida. So there's a lot of commuting. Nobody knows anyone. Nobody even knows their neighbor. It's a very it's the suburbs, but it is a very different experience than yours, Robert. What's interesting though is that in the past 6 years, I'd say, the one of my daughters who's playing competitive, we've been to four different clubs. in the area. And the reason that we've been going from club to club to club to club is more so dissatisfaction with the philosophy, the playing philosophy, or the actual coaching. So we've gone to Club A and it started off pretty well, but then pretty soon you kind of saw, okay, well, actually the philosophy they're talking about in terms of how they play football, is completely different than what's actually done on the pitch. And so I won't go into all those reasons, but it's interesting too, because each of those different four clubs, the parents were quite different. So Club One, for example, the parents didn't do anything together. So there was no introductory, okay, I'm coach so-and-so and, like to meet the parents and like you guys introduce yourselves to each other. Let's get to know each other too, because this is going to be a long season. We're going to be spending a lot of time on the road and the games. Let's try to mingle. That never happened. So for the entire, couple of seasons we were there, the parents hardly didn't really know each other. They would just by accident, by seeing each other at the games and kind of, they would introduce each other kind of, you know, in a cold environment type of thing. But, that was Club One. Club Two was one of those things where the parents got along. They actively went out. It's okay. Let's have a parents meeting. We're going to go to Buffalo Wild Wings, bring the kids. Let's get to know each other a little bit better because it is going to be a long season. So on and so forth. So, a lot of it is based on either the team mom, which to me is kind of the, one of the most important people, or team mom or team dad, but is one of the most important people in that club or at that on that team, because he or she is going to be the one that's going to try to bring people together oftentimes or do things. And also the coach and the relationship between the coach and the parents. We've had it too, where the coach has been very standoffish, where he doesn't want to do anything with the parents. It's all about the players. And then the team mom or team dad is that person that then interacts with the parents. So it has been very different. And at some clubs, it's been great where the parents actively kind of will plan things like maybe a lunch after a game or before a game. And again, at other clubs, it's been completely opposite, where there's been no interaction at all and no communication really. But for us, I think, we've used TeamSnap, one of the apps, and also one that this year that we're using too, one of the clubs is using it called Band. And that helps too, as far as, having everyone sign up for that. So we can all kind of stay in touch through the app and we can kind of message each other or message the group and say, hey, we're going to go out to, I don't know, ice cream after the game or whatever it is. That helps because, without that, sometimes, if you have a team mom, a team dad that doesn't really do a good job of trying to bring everyone together, sometimes you're kind of left on your own, left on your own devices.
Yeah, that's a great point. I feel like TeamSnap is going to be a sponsor of the show, because I'm also going to sit there and say TeamSnap is a great app that we use in our club, and it makes it very easy to reach out to people. I think we can safely agree that it takes a village to raise a soccer team, a travel soccer team, because, you usually have your team manager, your social coordinator, your photographers, and parents who hopefully take different roles. But, I think a lot of time those parents, don't have a chance to be parents. And, I think, Reed, I'm going to kind of direct this to you to get your thoughts on this as someone who's, taking the other side of this, where you've organized a club and coached. I think a lot of times parents don't want to volunteer or become involved because of this work-life balance. I mean, they feel like they're either A, committing a lot of time and effort already to their day job, which supports paying for the club and allowing their kid to participate in travel. Or B, they're committing a lot of time and energy to the club as a volunteer, as a social coordinator, and they're not actually getting to be a parent watching their child. So do you have any thoughts on, the parent volunteers and how they can maintain a work as in day job work as in teamwork, and then life as in being a parent balance?
Yeah, I have some suggestions. Well, before I do that, I do want to comment on what Chris was saying and then follow up with what you were saying, that it's really fascinating to look at these clubs and see the culture, the ethos sort of evolve from all levels. Like in when I was in Cincinnati, I knew every club, and you would interact with people and you could tell what club they were from just by the interaction, because a club takes on a personality. And so some clubs, like Chris was saying, they're very heavily involved. And other clubs, it's like, I'm going to drop my kid off and I'm out of here. And it does impact what you're saying. It does impact whether parents get involved, is whether the personality of the club is one of those jump in and make this a community thing, or is it a, hey, we pay this club to do this for us, we're out. Mm-hmm. But one of the ways that, you know, looking for balance with parents, one of the big keys is to engage them in a way that they realize that this isn't just their kids' sports experience, but this is an opportunity to build family or community or anything like that. And I was that coach that I wasn't standoffish with my parents because I saw them as my soccer family. And so I wanted to be engaged, and I had really young, really little kids at the time. So I wanted my little kids to have these older people in their life, these older players to look up to and be around. I wanted my kids toddling around the field during practice and stuff. My wife was always big on showing up and bringing me coffee at, you know, cold training sessions and stuff. And I wanted that. And I wanted this all to be the extended family, so that my family was being raised up in that environment as well. And so the fact that that personality came out in the teams I worked with, my parents were interested in being engaged because they saw it as more than just a simple activity. It was a community building experience. It was a life building experience. It was something like that. And I always preached that. I preached culture. I preached community. I preached family. For parents, it was an opportunity. And I had parents ask me all the time, how do I do this? I don't want to get involved in the politics, but I do want to be involved because of this. And we would talk about what that looks like from a psychosocial perspective for their kids. What can we model as parents that shows our kids, you know, something that they can use for life? So for you as a parent, being involved means you're becoming an advocate, so they know they always have somebody that has their back. Being supportive of the entire environment and not just your kid shows your kid that there is a need for that connection and community, and that there is a team, quote unquote, teamwork piece to it. You know, you get those kids that if mom and dad are only cheering for that kid, it does, in a sense, model to that kid that it's all about them instead of it's about the unit. And so we used to talk to our parents about, you know, hey, be unit oriented. From a balance perspective, the big one is for the parents to get involved with their passions, their skills, their interests. You won't find balance if you jump in, if you, you know, your day job is a doctor and you're like, I'll be the team accountant. I'll be the club, you know, accountant, because it's completely away from what your interest. Maybe you want that, but typically it's completely away from your interests, and so you feel stretched, right? Mm-hmm. But if you're the team doc, or if you say, I'll be the team doc, or I'll be at tournaments, I'll be the on call, or, you know, something like that, now you're just extending what you already do into it. I had parents who were in marketing, and so of course they were offering to help do marketing with the club. I'll be on the board and I'll offer my services as far as how we continue to brand the club out. I had a social media parent who was like, I will run all the social media for the team and for the silo, you know, or whatever, because that's what I do. And so what they were doing was the balance was found in extending what their passions were, who they were, and what their particular skill set was into this new soccer community. And so then it became an unplug from what they did in the day job, but it wasn't an overexertion because it was something that they were very natural and comfortable doing anyway. So it wasn't like extra, quote unquote, extra work. I had a team parent who was an unbelievably organized person. She was that, I mean, everybody joked that during season you didn't mess with her because she had a binder and she was, you know, it was, but you know, that's what she did for a living too. She was a technical writer and organized, you know, entire, you know, technical manuals for companies and stuff like that. And so that's what she did. She was very good at editing and organizing and cutting out, you know, and it bled over into this, what she did for this team. And that team ran most of the teams I worked ran so smoothly because the team administrators were people that was something that they were very comfortable doing for a living. So that'd be my advice, is if you're going to do it, extend what you already do very well or what you already love, so it doesn't feel like extra work.
I think one of the challenges, though, is for, say, a new parent or a parent of a child who's looking for a new club, is how do you know what that experience is like? So, for example, from like Club A versus B, C, and D are all different, all have different identities, all have a different, kind of expectation of value or just community or culture. Oftentimes you can ask people and say, hey, if you're a member of that club, how is it? What it's like to play on? Oftentimes the question is like, how are the parents? That's a big question, mm-hmm. which has big ramifications. But, sometimes from my experience is that you almost have to go through the process and go through joining that club. And within about 3 months or so, you have a really good feel for how this club ticks, everything from the team arm to the coach and how it's different than, say, another club. But that's been one of my challenges is that, there's no, other than asking people and then you're going to get biased opinions to a certain extent, it's difficult to know what that culture or that club is like until you actually put your child into it. And then you're part of that because you're one of the parents and you're living and breathing that for an entire season at a minimum.
Definitely. I would totally agree. And then that's, and there's no shame in as a parent saying, hey, this is my first experience. Let me quote unquote audit this season. And then I'll tell you where I best fit in and where I can help, but let me get a season under my belt.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that syncs with a lot of what Tommy Park said in our last episode, which was, if you want to see change in a club, get involved. And that's a hard thing to, I think, for some of us to sit there and think about where it's like Chris said, you want to do an audit of the club and sit there and say, well, can I contribute? Is this the right fit for us? And, but he's encouraging, obviously, from his perspective to get, Tommy, that is, to get involved as much as possible. Chris, I want to throw a question at you here. And this is kind of, I'm going to sound pretentious when I say this. I've been reading a lot of Fast Company magazine recently. There's been a lot of articles about the changing workforce and kind of how a lot of these companies are changing the way they do business. And, you mentioned at the beginning, in a previous life, you worked 9 to 5, but it really wasn't 9 to 5, it was 8 to 6. And I think that's true of a lot of people. There is very little 9 to 5 anymore. It's either, it's independent working or remote working or, participating in the gig economy where it's, you do something, you freelance or do a job for a certain period of the day and then do another job or something like that. Do you think that the way that the workplace is changing where the line between life outside of work and work is blurring is changing the way that we deal with travel soccer?
Yeah, I think it's completely blurred. In some ways, in a good way, and in some ways, in a negative way. I mean, for me, just in, like, say, the last 5 years, there's a lot more movement to allowing parents, allowing anyone, the workforce, to work at home. So whether it's one day a week or maybe it's a couple of days a week, but say today versus, say, 5 years ago, forget about 10 years ago. 10 years ago, it was extremely rare. But 5 years ago, maybe it started to happen a little bit. But I think that's something that's where it's more many companies. It depends what industry, it depends on your level. But in many companies, they're more open to that. So that's good in a way, but bad in another way. It's good in terms of being flexible so that if you do have to run out to take your kid to soccer practice or and oftentimes living in the soccer world too and having kids that play in soccer or have practices in soccer, there's oftentimes last minute changes. So, this field is flooded. We're going to have to now take your kids and go to a different field, or both of the fields are flooded. Now we're going to have to take the kids to play indoor tonight instead of playing outdoor. And that, for me, that happens all the time in terms of, it depends on the club, depends on the field conditions, but there's so many last minute things that happen. The blurring of the lines, it's bad in a way in terms of, I work from home. So, for me, opening up my laptop, no matter what time of the day, which is usually the first thing I do and it's usually the last thing I do in the day. But I mean, if I had to count the number of hours I work, I'm sure it's more than probably 60 hours, but it doesn't feel that way because I'm working from home. It's more in a relaxed environment. Sometimes it doesn't feel like work. So I guess there are blurring of the lines that gives us advantages as parents, where if we do get to work from home, we can be a little bit more flexible. But then again, I mean, our employers sometimes might expect us to be responding to an email at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock at night. And I mean, some big announcement or something going on where, everyone else is working on the laptops and answering the emails, but how come you aren't, type of thing. So yeah, there's pros and cons of both, I think.
And Reed, where did you see some blurring of the lines with some of your parents or with yourself, in terms of getting the work done? I mean, did you experience more and more often, you know, parents of kids doing either conference calls or having to leave to go to work and come back? Or, you know, where did you see some of this?
What I noticed, the blurring of the lines, is I saw a lot of my parents, just like Chris was saying, they ended up doing business at the field. So you'd hear a parent in the car on the conference call, or you started to, I never dug into what my parents did for a living. That was their thing if they wanted to tell me, but you could sort of see what they did for a living as time went by. And so you'd see that certain dad who was always in a suit or something, and you see him pacing the sideline on a Saturday on the phone, and you know, okay, he's probably on a business call. Or he would show up at a game in a suit and you'd say, oh, he just came from a meeting. So they would start to schedule their lives within it again. The other thing I saw was, parents would switch roles. I knew of a parent set I had that one went third shift. They were both in the medical industry, and one went third shift and the other one switched her shift to during the day so that they could coordinate that balance rather than being on the same shift.
Yeah, that's it. You know, being in the DC area, I think we parents purposely avoid asking each other what we do, because that's one of those DC stereotypes that we who live in the area hate. But you're right. You can tell after a while what some people are kind of doing and where their travel takes them. You get a sense of what they do. So
interject this. Here's a really cool thing I saw once. I saw a parent switch roles, switch careers based on the soccer industry. So the parent actually created a company that served a need in the soccer club industry. And that way, being at soccer actually meant that parent was advancing the new role. So that was the other thing you'll start to see is in this gig economy, is people will see a need and see an itch to scratch. And they'll say, you know what? If I want my kids to be in this sport, I'm going to scratch that itch and create a niche for me to make money so my kids can continue to do this, but it's not interrupting what I do for a living.
Smart man, smart woman.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Chris, let me change pace here for a minute and ask you a question. We've kind of talked in general about issues that, about parents dealing with schedules and things like that, but there probably is a difference between someone who's starting out in travel, you know, who's maybe in the third grade versus someone who's a high school senior and dealing with all of those travel and high school issues and things like that. Do you have any thoughts on kind of the difference between age levels since you've been through it?
Yeah. For me personally, last year especially was the year from hell in terms of scheduling, in terms of kind of just trying to manage everything, because my daughter, the one that's playing kind of at the DA level now this season, but last season she was on a travel team and then she was also on her middle school team. And with middle school, it's a whole different experience. It's very much they want to play and win for the team, win for the school. So it's a different experience. But what happened last year was that, for middle school, it's, January through March, the soccer season. And it's 5 days a week. So Monday through Friday, there's practices, to start up. And then pretty soon thereafter, there's games, and sometimes there's two games a week or sometimes three games a week. And that was nuts, because so almost every day there'd be a game. So say Monday there was a game, and most of the games usually were at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So, I would want to go, my kids are already at school, but I would want to go to the game and see her play. Again, being flexible, working from home, that helped a lot. So being able to get there, watch her play the game. But then she still had travel team. So travel team last year was, 3 nights a week of practice. So it was oftentimes going to school, watching her play, game's over, she jumps in the car, and then we're driving directly straight to practice. And maybe we have a sandwich or a snack in the car, or maybe she would eat afterwards. But, for her, and then of course there's homework on top of that. So that was nuts. And then she still have games of the weekend for travel. So this season with Development Academy, they don't allow her to play middle school. So there's an advantage to that, at least from my perspective and also from her perspective. And it makes sense, but just the sheer time involved and driving around and going to away games sometimes and for middle school and then also travel team was absolutely just insane. And that's just one kid. That didn't include the two others who were playing AYSO. So it really felt like a job. It felt like a job almost 7 days a week, maybe 6 days a week. Really exhausting, but from January to March was just the crazy time. And once that was over for middle school, then there was a little bit of a relief. And then continuing to play even tribal team and then for the other kids, AYSO. But I feel for parents. I mean, again, it's one of those things that, not every parent can do that. And, they're working and oftentimes too, like Reed would say, I'd see them kind of switching. Sometimes you see the dad at the games. Sometimes you see the mom at the games. But it's a really, I feel for parents in terms of trying to manage that, which is just insane.
Reed, any thoughts on the age differences?
Yes. One of the ones that I saw, I was going to piggyback off what Chris said about switching off, was you would see at different ages when a sibling would age into the club. So usually my 13s, 14s had a younger sibling, or maybe 12s had a younger sibling, and that's when I might have that particular kid for 3 or 4 years. And it's just that kid, so you're seeing both parents at the games. But all of a sudden, the younger sibling joins the club because now they're at an age where they can play. And so you're starting to see dad at one game and the next, even at tournaments, dad at game in the morning, mom at game in the afternoon, dad at game in the morning. And the parents are switching off because they're having to rotate between the multiple kids just to be able to accommodate it. And so usually at 12, 13 was when I saw the craziness sort of enter a family's schedule, because multiple siblings might start playing. The other big difference, as Chris said, is you would see for us in Ohio, you can't play both club and high school at the same time. It's a Ohio high school rule. So what you'd see is at age like 14, 15, you'd actually see a slowdown in people's logistics in the fall because it was one sport. And so the craziness sort of went away for some of those families because the kid went to school and everything was covered by the school, the transportation. They were already at school for practice and everything. They probably got transportation or drove themselves to school. So you would hear the parents talk about, oh my gosh, the falls are like my break from the craziness of the logistics of club soccer.
Do you think that's a good idea to be able to force them to do one or the other?
We always struggle with it. See, it's an antiquated rule that was enacted years and years and years back. And the rumor is it was originally enacted because there was a lot of cheating going on in some of the other sports. So they did this for all from happening. Now, the thing is I was in Florida for a while with Chris. And the advantage to not doing that rule was I had a team down there who they also played high school ball together. So this was a cohesive team that really had a great team culture. And the problem with the breaking up of, you know, not allowing them to play in the fall. The other rule is that only 5 kids from one particular team can play for the same high school. So you've got a team of 15 to 20 kids. And when you get to that age, now when you're at trials, you're not only, this is what's crazy, you're not only trying to evaluate based on, you know, what's happening on the field, but then you're looking at your roster and you're going, okay, they both go to this high school. And so do these 4. So out of these 6, we can only take 5 of them. So we got to pick the best. So it became this granular, and you'd find these kids who, you know, you'd find these teams where you'd break up this group of kids that had been together their entire lives now because of this high school rule. And so it's just, I always struggle with that rule because it was like, is this adults wanting to put some rules in there to make sure the adults behave, or is this actually something that benefits the actual kids who are the beneficiaries of the sport?
Yeah. And for me personally, when I played high school soccer, that was, I mean, to me, looking back, some of the most memorable years of my life in terms of some of the happiest moments playing with my friends. And then also, you know, playing against other schools and, you mean, shock victories and the pep rallies and all those things and the varsity jackets and things. So it's difficult because I know that travel teams often look at high schools and look down on them in terms of their coaching level. And even with middle school, the same thing happens too, where they look at middle school and go, oh, That's not real soccer. And for me, actually, watching the games, watching middle school games, and then watching travel team games, it's almost like it's a different sport, because the middle school games are a lot more physical, more entertaining in some ways in terms of more goals. The level of play is more roller coaster. So you have some players that are really good, others that are pretty weak. So it's inconsistent. But with travel, it's very consistent, but it's almost very much tiki-taka. So it can get boring at times watching those games. But it's just interesting. I like Reed said too, it's you know, probably a state-by-state thing or a regional thing. There's still a lot of controversy about, you know, kind of the pros and cons of playing, whether it's middle school or high school. And I guess it depends on what you're looking at, how you're judging it. But it is a fascinating conversation.
Yeah, it certainly is. So before we get to final comments, what I wanted to do is mention this is a conversation I think that isn't limited to this podcast. I mean, I think we all have, everybody who listens hopefully has a thought about how to better manage time and as a parent and, make sure that they're balancing their lives. But probably the best way to keep going that conversation is to follow the podcast on Twitter at Shot Happens. And Coach, what's the best way that people can reach out to you to share some comments with you?
At Coach_Reed on Twitter is probably the easiest way. And you can also find me at the CTG Project HQ, which is the Changing the Game Project Twitter handle. I'm usually hiding behind either of those, chatting with people.
Yep, definitely putting out good advice on those too. And Chris, you are a man that is, if people can't find you, they're not trying hard enough. What are some of the best ways for people to reach out to you?
Yeah, definitely. You can read some of my articles on the website, worldsoccertalk.com. My Twitter address is at WSoccerTalk, or Facebook. You can just Google World Soccer Talk and it'll come up. But I'm always, if anyone has any questions or feedback, I'm always willing to get back to you guys. But thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I'll endorse the World Soccer Talk products are excellent. I'm biased, but they certainly are. And maybe if you tweet it, Chris, he'll be answering during a practice or something. But
most probably.
Let's do last thoughts. Any Chris, last piece of advice that you would give to travel parents to maintain work-life balance?
I think at the end of the day, it's to enjoy it. I mean, it is a very stressful experience. It is huge sacrifices of not just time, but oftentimes priorities. So things come up and it's like, okay, I can't do that. This has to come first, whether it's, kids soccer practice or kids games, etc. But I think at the end of the day, it's just trying to enjoy it. So, just get to know the other parents, appreciate all of the time commitments that the coaches are putting into this and, everyone behind each club in terms of all of the planning and the team mom and things like that. I think at the end of the day too, it's one of those things that, communication is important. So oftentimes those emails or messages going out from the team mom or the coach, it helps that if everyone's on the same page, if everyone's getting back to that person in a pretty quick fashion. Otherwise things bog down and it can get messy, but I'd say just try to enjoy it the best that you can. It is one of those experiences that you'll probably never forget. It'll be one of those things that you'll always look back at and probably laugh in years later. But I think some fond memories of spending a lot of quality time with your children and seeing them grow as individuals, both mentally and physically.
And Coach, you get the last word, some last parting advice?
Yes, I would agree with Chris. Fun, that's my word of the year for 2018. So if it's not fun, why are we doing it? And as we know, fun can be defined in so many ways. So make sure that there's at least a component of fun in it. Don't think about it as just work-life balance or work-soccer balance, but work-soccer and family balance. You should really sit down at the beginning of every season or before you make a decision and incorporate in there the whole concept of family and schedule it out. Make sure that you're ahead of time working out. Is this club a good fit for our personality, our family's ethos? Because if it is, you'll mesh right in and you'll find that community and you'll build through it. Check in with your kids. That's the other one. You know, we checked in with our kids. Are you having fun? Are you enjoying this? Is it worth it? Because a lot of times, all of a sudden, 2 years go by and our kids like, I haven't liked this sport for 2 years. You know, it's so that's the other big one is, you know, make sure it's just continued work, life, family balance piece of it. And probably the last piece would be if you can find that team that's extremely organized and or fits your personality and find your niche. That's just the big one. I had a parent that her thing was taking pictures. She loved being a team photography piece, and that was her niche, but that created that balance for her with the team, and that gave her a role with the team, and it made it easier on other parents who weren't at games because they were balancing other things to see the pictures, and then she started taking videos, so they got to see their kids play even though they weren't there because it was being streamed via Facebook from Texas all the way back to Ohio. I mean, how brilliant is that? So that'd be my advice is, you know, make sure you make decisions well ahead of time so you're planning it based on the family, fun, check in with your kids, and find your niche.
Great. I'll endorse the team photographer thing too, because a good team photographer can make a huge difference. And it doesn't even have to be somebody who's a professional photographer. As long as they have a fancy camera, they can really contribute to the team. So, well, that'll do it for this episode of Shot Happens. Coach, don't you have something you'd like to end the episode on?
Shot happens, but make sure you find your balance in there somewhere.